This is Tony. You're listening to the A Minute to Midnight show. Today we have Michael Snyder returning, and Michael's great when it comes to things on the economy and a whole lot of other things to do with world events. And we cover a lot of ground in this show about the economy and also about the state of Israel and the potential dividing of Israel and Jerusalem. Fascinating interview. Stay tuned. I'm sure you'll enjoy it. I'm pleased to have Michael Snyder back on the A Minute to Midnight show. It's been a few months since we last had Michael on the show, so welcome back.
It's great to be back with you, Tony. Thank you for having me on today.
It's always a pleasure, and we look forward to it. And I know when I tell people that you're coming on the show, I get a bit of excitement from people going, oh, great, that's awesome. So, yeah, I've been looking forward to it. And there's loads of stuff we can talk about. But firstly, I thought I'd like to ask you, if we look at the global financial markets at the moment, what's happening and how significant was the Italian referendum on constitutional reforms that we've just seen over the weekend? What does it mean for the euro, the stock markets, and the banking sector?
Well, the vote in Italy, you know, it was another vote that kind of furthered this anti-establishment trend that we're seeing all over the world. And, you know, at the heart of it was just about some constitutional reforms, probably not that huge of a deal. But what made it significant is the current Italian government based their future on the result of the referendum. In fact, the prime minister said he would resign if it didn't go his way. And so that gave a lot of fuel to the opposition. So it became about you know, the current Italian government, they're pro-Europe, pro-Eurozone, and the opposition led by the five-star movement, a comedian Beppe Grillo, and they want to take Italy out of the Euro and out of the European Union altogether eventually. And so that was really kind of, you know, what the vote was about. And it was overwhelmingly against the referendum. You know, that when all the votes are counted, it's going to be somewhere around 60% of Italians voted no. Mm. And so what that does is sends a huge message to basically the European elite saying Italy, is rejecting the kind of the European system. And so this is going to cause some problems. Number one, well, when the election results were announced last night, the euro started tumbling dramatically. It's bounced back since then, but expect to see the euro go down in the weeks and months ahead. You know, it wasn't too long ago in 2014 when it took almost $1.40 to get 1 euro. Now we're down to about $1.05. I'm expecting it to continue to fall. And in fact, I expect the euro and US dollar to, not in the not too far distant future, get to parity. In other words, a euro and the US dollar will be the same value. So look for more problems with the euro, number one. Number two, we need to watch Italian government bonds, because already, you know, they've been spiking in terms of the interest rates in anticipation that the vote would go this way. And look for those rates to go even higher, which means it's going to be more expensive for the Italian government to borrow money. And they've already got huge financial problems. And then in the Italian economy, it's going to be more expensive for regular Italians to borrow money, slow the Italian economy down even more, and, you know, just accelerate the economic crisis in Italy. Which, why is Italy important? Well, if you remember Greece and all the problems they caused, Greece is the 44th largest economy in the world. Italy is the 8th largest economy in the world. So very, very significant. But even more important than those factors are the Italian banks. Where already there's eight, you know, mid-sized to large Italian banks that are on the verge of failing right now. And then a whole bunch of others are in tremendous amount of trouble because of NPLs, non-performing loans. All, you know, Italian banks that their banking system is a complete and total mess. And the thing is, Italians want to get out of Europe, but without the help of Europe, Italy's banking system would have already collapsed by now. But they've got a massive banking crisis, and now this vote has thrown the future of any type of rescue or any, you know, plan for these banks into doubt. So there's huge problems with Italian banks, which could bleed over to the rest of the continent because all these banks and financial institutions are interlinked. So I believe we're seeing the potential of a major financial crisis in Europe, even far beyond what we've already seen with Greece and some of the other nations. But this is Italy. This is the eighth largest economy in the world. And, you know, financial markets seem to be taking things somewhat in stride today after some, initial panicking. But as the days and weeks and months ahead play out, things in Europe could very rapidly go from bad to worse.
What's happening with the British and the pound? How's that performing?
Well, things have stabilized since initially we had seen, the British pound. You know, when there was the Brexit vote, there was, a lot of volatility in the financial markets, and the British pound was really, suffering. And since that time, actually, it's gone down even more. Right now, the Great British Pound, U.S. dollar, is at about 127. And so, that's way down from where it used to be. And now, as we move forward and the U.K. formally starts to move out of the European Union and decouples, and that's going to cause problems and more problems for the European Union. And so we'll want to keep watching for that. But and that's a concern. And wherever you look, pretty much the U.S. dollar is strengthening ever since Donald Trump was elected. The dollar has been strengthening. And people might think, well, that's good for the United States. But for the United States, that makes it tough because it makes it harder to export our goods and services because they're more expensive to the rest of the world. And then the rest of the world has been, in terms of funding their growth, and especially in developing countries, emerging economies such as Brazil, where during the boom times they borrowed lots and lots of cheap dollars. Now that the dollar is going up, they have to pay those loans back in more expensive dollars relative to their own currency. So what it does, a surging U.S. dollar puts a damper on the rest of the planet in terms of economic growth, paying back debts, all kinds of things. So the dollar going up is not really good news for the U.S. economy. I mean, for the world economy, because for the world economy to boom, they tend to boom when dollars are cheap and you can borrow them at very low interest rates. But now all that is shifting. And so it's actually a troubling sign as we move into 2017.
Okay. Another thing I see, is what's been happening in India, where they've basically banned a lot of cash and taken all the big notes out of the system, to basically force people into paying taxes and whatnot, and use the excuse that only, criminals use cash, sort of thing. But one thing I noticed, 2015 Economist magazine, their front cover had a picture of Indian Prime Minister Modi with his arm outstretched, and he was wearing gold and gold arm, and fleeing out from underneath his arm was a piggy bank. And to me, that's like, saying that they had this planned more than 2 years ago. And the interesting thing with India is I think they've biometrically gone and scanned pretty much the entire population. So maybe they're going to try and push India into the banking system more, because I think, 50% or 70% or some large number of Indians don't even have a bank account. So perhaps the whole thing is India's like maybe a test case to push people towards a cashless society. And if you can get everyone in India into the banking system, then they could do it anywhere in the world. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, it's true, Tony. I mean, India is, in a lot of cases, is a test case for the new world order, whether it's with, they've been pushing the cashless society for a while. They're trying to get even the poor people, people in the slums, onto debit cards, you know, to get them to quit using cash. Of course, in other areas, for example, sterilization, there's a big push for sterilization in India. And in India, people are often so poor they can't stand up for themselves. That's why the New World Order likes to kind of use India as a testing ground. But we're seeing this all over the planet, a move away from cash. Whether it's, you know, many banks in Scandinavia, we're talking Norway, Sweden, they won't take cash and they won't give cash to you, actually. Or in Southern Europe, countries like Italy and France and Spain, they've banned cash transactions over a certain amount. So they're, you know, you can still use cash, but only up to a certain amount. So that's slowly banning cash by saying, okay, you can still use cash, but only, you know, up to a certain amount. Or here in the United States, just earlier today, there was an article on USA Today about how Amazon has setting up and testing a grocery store that doesn't have a checkout counter at all. You just go in, you tap your phone when you enter, and you know, so it says who you are and links your account. And then you go in, and as you pick up grocery items, it understands that and registers that. And then you just walk out of the store, and it deducts the amount from your account. And so this is what Amazon is setting up. It was front page news in USA Today. So all over the world, we're seeing the move toward a cashless society, and governments want to get rid of cash because they can't track it, they can't trace it, they can't see what's happening with it as easily as other forms of payment. So they want everything to go electronic. And, you know, obviously that's very, very troubling for those that know the Book of Revelation.
Yes, absolutely. And the thing is, it's also possible then for the banks to charge whatever fee they want if they've got you totally in that system and there is no cash. You know, they could see negative interest rates and all kinds of fees too. So it's not a good picture. And the thing is that astounds me is how many people are so oblivious to this, and they think, oh, well, we don't need cash, oh, we don't use it, you know, well, let's get rid of it. And they think, oh, they bought the line that only criminals and tax evaders use cash, so yeah, we need to get rid of it so that we get rid of the criminals. But quite frankly, all it does is transfer the power into the laps of the really big criminals.
Oh, it does. And, you know, just imagine, you know, when everybody has to use the system, because, you know, if you're not going to be able to buy without being in the electronic system, you're not going to be able to sell without it. You won't be able to get a job. You won't be able to do anything. And so, and, you know, then that sets up the government or whoever to be the gatekeeper to say, okay, if you want to be part of the system, you've got to do this. You've got to take this loyalty oath. You've got to do such and such, whatever it is. They can set conditions for participation in the system. And then they can, you know, watch and track and monitor and control. I mean, the potential for tyranny is just off the charts.
Absolutely, I totally agree. So what's happening in Venezuela? Has the situation gotten better or worse, or what's going on there?
Oh, well, it continues to get worse. The currency has become basically continues to be devalued. It's essentially worth, you know, toilet paper at this point. You know, you've got over half the country, one survey found, can't provide their families with three meals a day. So you've got just an entire country that's imploding, but the United States and the New World Order want this to happen because they want the government to be overthrown in Venezuela. They want to change the system there. They want to integrate Venezuela back into the kind of New World Order, the global community. And so they want the economy to collapse. They want the order to fail there, the government to fail. And so they're not stepping in. They're not helping out. They're not providing a lot of food. But they want to see suffering and pain, so it will bring the government down.
Are there any other countries or areas in the world that you particularly have as concerns at the moment?
Oh, you know, they're all over, you know, Turkey, there's big problems with in Turkey, their financial system starting to come apart. And of course, all over the Middle East, whether you're talking about Syria, you know, is basically a post-apocalyptic war zone at this point, thanks to Hillary Clinton and the Obama administration in Libya. And I mean, you know, the trouble spots just go on and on and on and on. But, you know, everybody's watching the big countries, the United States, they're watching Europe, they're watching Asia, and they're wondering when the big financial meltdown is going to come. I would keep a close eye on Europe, because I think Europe is the big problem. But one of the key things to watch for, you know, in terms of the United States, we're going to talk about in just a little bit here with the division of the land of Israel, because that's one of the absolute, in fact, it's the most important prophetic marker that we're watching for, because once that happens, all hell is going to break loose, Tony.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, we will definitely be coming to that shortly. I just want to talk a little bit, though, before we get to that, because it'll kind of lead into it. We have, you know, Donald Trump obviously being elected, and yet there are still questions about vote recounts and things. Do you see any significance in that, or is it all just a distraction, this whole vote recounting thing?
I don't think the recount is going to come to anything, because first of all, we're talking about three states. A deadline was already missed in Pennsylvania, and the vote margins are too large to be overcome easily, and it would have to be all three states that, you know, get reversed in order to give Hillary Clinton any chance. And then December 19th now is only 2 weeks away, where the Electoral College will cast their votes, and that will be that, you know. So, and that, of course, there's also buzz that the people are trying to rally, you know, the electors who are supposed to vote for Donald Trump to not vote for him. And they're saying if they could get enough of those electors to flip, that they could, you know, try to do something, whether flip it to Hillary Clinton or, you know, put those votes toward another candidate. Today, there was a report that, you know, they want to move some of those electoral votes to John Kasich and then throw it into the House of Representatives. But I don't expect any of those measures to work. I believe Donald Trump will be elected on December 19th at the Electoral College, that he will be our next president. So, and then another thing we need to watch out for, of course, is January 20th, Inauguration Day, where ISIS is now promising to make it a day of blood. The radical left wants to turn it into one of the biggest political protests in U.S. history. So there's concern about what we could see on Inauguration Day. But I do believe Donald Trump is going to be our next president. But that doesn't mean that things will get better, as, you know, a lot of Christians, a lot of conservatives, a lot of patriots think Donald Trump's won the election. The battle is over. Everything's going to get better now. I would not count on that.
No, well, that's right. I see a lot of Americans are sort of in this euphoric state almost now, thinking that Donald Trump's going to revive American glory and, you know, as if he could be the savior. But I actually remember a similar kind of thing when Obama was first elected. First time round, there was this crazy euphoric sort of thing, thinking that he was going to, you know, take America and make them exceedingly great, and looking at it from the other side of the world. So it's kind of similar but different in a sense. I also, you know, see, again, The Economist magazine, the cover that's supposed to come out next month, January 2017, has Donald Trump on the front cover. And, you know, I believe that the people in control of The Economist magazine are the Rothschild family, and they're not going to put Donald Trump on the front if they plan on having Hillary Clinton steal the election at this late stage. But in terms of whether he actually improves things and does all these things that they're expecting, as long as the Federal Reserve System exists, how do you ever get out of the real financial mess?
Oh, it's true, Tony, because ultimately the Federal Reserve System was put in 1913 to create an endless debt spiral from which the U.S. government could never possibly escape. And so since the Federal Reserve was created, the value of the U.S. dollar has declined by more than 98%, and the size of the U.S. national debt has increased by well over 5,000 times, gotten more than 5,000 times larger. And so you've got all this debt. And what debt does is it takes consumption from the future and brings it into the present. In other words, stealing from our children and grandchildren to make the right now a little bit brighter. And that's the only way that Barack Obama has been able to, you know, really stabilize the U.S. economy. It hasn't been growing. In fact, Barack Obama is going to be the only president in all of U.S. history to not have a single year when U.S. GDP grew by at least 3%, and he's had two terms to do it. So the economy has been stagnating, but we've not been in a horrible depression. And the only way he's been able to do that is to go into tremendous amounts of debt. In fact, since he set foot in the White House, Barack Obama, the U.S. national debt has been increasing by more than $1.1 trillion a year. And it's accelerating here right at the end of his term, as last fiscal year it increased by more than $1.3 trillion. And this fiscal year, which has already started, we're on pace to add more than $2 trillion to the national debt. And see, what that does is when the government spends that money, it ends up in the pockets of ordinary people like you and me. And then when ordinary people get a hold of it, they spend it on goods and services that they need and so on and so forth. So government spending has a multiplier effect in the economy, adds to the economy. And so, you know, since Barack Obama's been in the White House, we've added more than $9 trillion to the national debt, but that $9 trillion has had an even larger effect on the U.S. economy as a whole. Now, let's just, you know, basically give it a, you know, just double that for the overall impact on the economy, although probably significantly greater than that, but let's just double it to about $18 trillion. So that's by borrowing and spending, Barack Obama has added, you know, at least $18 trillion of economic activity to the U.S. economy during his 8 years. Now, if you took that away, that all that debt and spending away, then we would be in a rip-roaring depression right now. The United States is. Okay, so we've been living this false debt-fueled prosperity, and I haven't even talked about state debt, local government debt, corporate debt, household debt, just federal government debt. Now, Donald Trump comes in, and he's got a decision to make. Donald Trump, he could continue what Barack Obama is doing, continue to going into tremendous amounts of debt, and that would keep us at a similar level in terms of our standard of living and the how well the U.S. economy is performing, this debt-fueled level. But, you know, going into this amount of debt is absolutely insane because we're literally destroying the future. Now, if Donald Trump says, hey, we don't want to go into so much debt, we're going to get this debt under control, well, that's going to just instantly start sucking immense amounts of money out of the economy, and it would massively slow down economic activity, plunging us into a depression. So Donald Trump basically has a, you know, he's not a magician. And if we continue with this insane debt-based Federal Reserve system and currency that we have right now, Donald Trump has two choices: either continue going into a tremendous amount of debt to try to keep people as happy as long as possible, but destroying the future in the process, or going into a depression right now. I mean, those are really the only two choices that he's facing.
Yeah, and the Federal Reserve system, let's face it, it was set up to fail, I believe, to set up to ultimately, anyone that can do the maths means that you constantly borrowing at debt. Eventually it gets to the point where the debt is so big it can't be paid back. So they've kind of, the globalists in a sense, have got you, got us all tied up through that system. So I don't really see how Trump can change that. One way or another, it's not a good picture. And then looking at all the other aspects of the world economy that you've mentioned before, it's like, to me, it's like all dovetailing to some point where there's a point of no return. And the whole idea is they want to crash the system and to bring in a new system at some point. That's always been the plan, I believe, right from the word go. But going to Donald Trump on another aspect, what about his policy towards Israel, and who has he selected or is selecting in his administration that could cause problems, or are we going to have some problems even before Trump is inaugurated when it comes to Israel and U.S. relations?
Well, Donald Trump has come out in terms of Israel. He did say something troubling in that he Donald Trump has said that he would like to, bring the Israelis and the Palestinians together for the ultimate deal and for the good of humanity is what he says. And basically, get them to agree to divide the land into two states, a two-state solution. And that's what he'd like to see in the Middle East. Now, if he keeps his promises during the campaign, that's not going to happen because Donald Trump is promising to move the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem, which would which would the Palestinians, that would really, really upset them. So that would eliminate any chance of a deal there. And Donald Trump has talked about how Jerusalem, it will be the undivided city of Jerusalem will belong to Israel forever. And the Palestinians are not going to accept any deal that does not include East Jerusalem. So, the odds of any type of deal actually happening under Donald Trump are extremely low. And see, the Obama administration knows this, Tony. And so the Obama administration, Barack Obama has been talking about the importance of a Palestinian state for a very long time. And he tried to get something to happen through negotiations and nothing happened. The negotiations have totally broken down. And so at this point, if Barack Obama wanted to leave a legacy in the Middle East, there is only one opportunity to do that, and that's at the United Nations. And of course, Barack Obama is still president. Most Americans think, oh, Obama's done, Obama's finished. No, Obama could actually do more damage in these last couple of months, about a month and a half he has left, while he's still in office, than he's done in his entire presidency so far, and specifically with regard to the land of Israel. And over in Israel, the government over there is totally freaked out. Why? Well, they had specifically asked the Obama administration, they're like, can you please promise that you'll veto any anti-Israel resolutions at the UN Security Council for the rest of Obama's term? And they were flatly turned down. And then Obama turned around and told the Palestinians, he said, hey, wait for any action at the United Nations until after the election, because he didn't want to mess up Hillary Clinton's chances. So, this period of time now that the election is over, leading up to January 20th, Obama's last day in office, there is the potential for something to happen at the United Nations, specifically the UN Security Council. Now, Tony, let's go back to September 2015. If you remember, there was more buzz about that month than perhaps any month we've ever seen. Yeah. We had the blood moons. We had the end of the Shemitah year. The Pope was coming to the United States. But something that was even more important was that at that time, France had a UN Security Council resolution all ready to go and that they were going to introduce that would have permanently divided the land of Israel into two states, formally recognized a Palestinian state at the UN Security Council for the very first time and given them East Jerusalem as their capital. And so that was all ready to go, and the rest of the UN Security Council was all set to vote for it. The only thing that stood in the way, was what was Barack Obama going to do? Because if the United States has veto power at the UN Security Council. So France and everyone else needed the United States to go along because the UN could just veto it. Because if the US was ready to go along, it was going to happen. The land of Israel was going to be divided by the UN Security Council. But if Barack Obama didn't go along, then France was going to drop it and for another time. And so Barack Obama had the fate of the land of Israel in his hands, and he said, okay, no, we're not going to do it, at least not yet. And so at that time, the land of Israel was not divided. And so we had seen, for example, in August 2015, the financial markets went crazy, the biggest financial shaking since the end of the previous Shemitah year. And then everyone was saying, this is it, here in September, we're going to be hit. And people were talking about all kinds of other judgments, this and that and the other thing that were going to happen. But then none of them happened. It was kind of like someone hit a pause button, like God hit a pause button, because what did we do at that point? The scriptures say, you know, regarding Israel, those that bless you will be blessed, those that curse you will be cursed. And we've seen so many instances of the cursing. But in this instance, Barack Obama, and virtually everything else he's ever done has been bad, but in this instance, he made the right decision. He blessed Israel by protecting Israel from being divided. And since that time, we've seen this pause. We haven't seen the great financial crisis many were anticipating. We haven't seen the other things people were saying were going to happen. And it was like a pause button was hit. And we've been kind of in this bubble where things haven't been getting a whole lot better, but things haven't been getting a whole lot worse either. So we've been in this period of time. But now we've been getting closer to the end of Obama's term, and earlier this year, the Obama administration said, well, you know, we don't know what we're going to do, but by the end of our term, you know, we may consider going along with this kind of UN Security Council resolution that would divide the land of Israel. And so they put it on the table. For the first time ever, a U.S. administration put it on the table. They didn't say, we don't know which way we're going to go, but it was put on the table. And now here, within just the recent months, we're starting to see a lot of buzz around this. In fact, former UN Ambassador John Bolton, who is being considered by Donald Trump for Secretary of State, he came out and said, hey, there's all – he said this in a radio interview. He said, there's all kind of speculation over at UN headquarters about this kind of resolution, a resolution which would set the parameters for a Palestinian state and that would permanently divide the land of Israel. And now, you know, what people need to understand, Tony, is that a UN Security Council resolution would be legally binding on the parties, legally binding on Israel, legally binding on the Palestinians. Unlike normal UN General Assembly resolutions, which are not legally binding. In fact, just a few days ago, on last Wednesday, the UN General Assembly, not the Security Council, but the UN General Assembly, which, remember, their resolutions are not legally binding, but the UN General Assembly passed six significant anti-Israel resolutions. One resolution called for a final peace settlement between the Israelis and Palestinians, which would divide the land of Israel into two states. Another of the resolutions addressed the city of Jerusalem, and it called Israel the occupying power and called for a division of the city between the two, the Israelis and the Palestinians. They also passed a resolution regarding the Golan Heights, calling on Israel to completely withdraw from the Golan Heights completely and give that land entirely back to Syria. And all these resolutions were passed by just giant votes. For example, the one regarding Palestine, the vote was 153 in favor, only 7 against. But these were General Assembly resolutions, Tony, so they're not legally binding, unlike the UN Security Council. But Tony,
yes, well, that's actually a really important distinction that I think people don't understand and don't get. They saw that and thought, oh, these six resolutions are going to be binding, but those six resolutions didn't even make it into the news in Israel. I think the people there are now so used to seeing these kind of toothless UN resolutions that for them it's just business as usual. And yet on social media we've seen an explosion of worry that it's significant and that, you know, they'll now proceed to divide Israel and Jerusalem. But we've seen all that before. So you've just clarified the difference, and I think that's a huge clarification.
Yeah, although what this shows is, Tony, that the rest of the world overwhelmingly is in favor of dividing the land of Israel. For example, the resolution about the question of Palestine, about the, you know, pushing for a two-state solution, the vote was 153 in favor and 7 against.
Yeah.
So virtually the whole world wants to divide the land of Israel. They're putting a tremendous amount of pressure on Barack Obama to do this. And we're seeing this in our major newspaper. In October, there was an article in the Wall Street Journal, which entitled Obama's Israel Surprise, talking about how Barack Obama could do this at the United Nations right right before the end of his term. There was later there was an article in the New York Times where the New York Times editorial board and the newspaper itself, not just one of their reporters, but the newspaper itself, formally endorsed a UN Security Council resolution that would divide the land of Israel and the city of Jerusalem. And they said Barack Obama should do this before the end of his term. Because there's this race against time, Tony, because those that want to see this two-state solution know that once Donald Trump gets in, it's probably not going to happen anytime soon, because Donald Trump has already said he's not going to go along with any type of UN Security Council resolution like this. And so they're in a race against time. They're putting a lot of pressure on Barack Obama because they want to, they say they want to save the two-state solution. This is the last chance. You know, there's all this hype. There's all this expectation. And in fact, just not too long ago, just a couple weeks ago, now Jimmy Carter, he's ex-president Jimmy Carter, our oldest living president, wrote an editorial for the New York Times where he publicly called for this kind of resolution, this type of UN Security Council resolution. And, you know, he was the one that negotiated peace between Israel and Egypt back in the 1970s. Ever since then, he's been very pro-Palestinian, very much in favor of Palestinian state. And one of Jimmy Carter's dreams is to see a Palestinian state in his lifetime. And, of course, he's right there at the end of his life. He knows if Donald Trump gets in, that dream might be dead. So he, in the New York Times, he published an editorial calling on Barack Obama saying, you need to do this before the end of your term.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, Jimmy Carter's just got communist written all over him as far as I can see. But going back to that, you know, Zechariah 12:3 tells us that Jerusalem will be a heavy stone, you know, to the world, anyone who seeks to move it. And so I see, you know, that's a real critical piece of the end times puzzle.
Oh, it absolutely, I mean, this is absolutely critical, Tony. And this is, you know what, because right now Christians don't understand how important this is. The church doesn't understand this, how important this is. Hardly anyone's talking about it. Preachers are not talking about it. And, you know, in fact, I wish someone other than myself, I wish I knew other people out there, voices that were talking about this. I mean, you go to Joel chapter 3, yeah. And it talks about the last days. And in Joel chapter 3, verse 2, it says, I will gather all the nations and bring them down to the valley of Jehoshaphat. I will enter into judgment with them there regarding my people and my heritage, Israel, whom they have scattered among the nations. They have also divided up my land. It's ultimately, you know, yeah, it's the land of Israel, but ultimately the ownership of it belongs to God. It's his land. And the rest of the world is intent on dividing up his land. And now, Tony, let me, you know, for those in your audience who don't understand the implications of this, why is Michael Snyder so freaked out about this UN Security Council resolution, what Obama might do, what we might see? The reason is this. Is because God has been, of course, we know from the scriptures, God does nothing except that he reveals it to his prophets. And for decades, men and women of God all over the world have been shown that in the future there will be a Palestinian state, the land of Israel will be divided. And what comes after that is judgment. And what we've seen for decades, of course, is there's a pattern. Whenever we do something moving toward dividing the land of Israel, there's an immediate judgment. For example, the very first peace conference held under George Bush Sr., the Madrid Peace Conference, what that resulted in, the perfect storm, where three huge storms came together, produced a 1,000-year storm. It actually went 1,000 miles the wrong direction, a retrograde storm slammed right into his George Bush Sr.'s home on the coast of Maine. So while he was in Madrid giving a speech talking about how Israel needed to give up land for peace, his home was being destroyed there on the coast of Maine. The perfect storm, they made a big Hollywood movie out of that. Or you look later under George W. Bush, the second George Bush, when they pulled he convinced Israel to pull the settlers out of Gaza, turn it completely over to the Palestinians. Well, the day the last settlers left Gaza was when Hurricane Katrina formed and slammed into New Orleans, became the costliest natural disaster in U.S. history. And there's been dozens of these instances which we've seen throughout the years. When we do something against Israel, well, like I said, Israel, those that curse Israel will be cursed. And we've seen this time and time again, where we've done something and then there's been an immediate judgment. Well, if we formally divide the land of Israel at the United Nations, recognize a Palestinian state, and divide Jerusalem, giving East Jerusalem to the Palestinians at the UN Security Council, it would be the biggest betrayal of Israel of all time, the biggest one of all. And so we should expect the biggest judgment. And Tony, my wife and I, Miranda, have been studying these prophecies, what men and women of God all over the world with long track records have been shown for decades. And what they've been shown over and over again is that when we divide the land of Israel, our land will be divided. Specifically, what men and women prophetically have been shown all over the world is that there will be a massive earthquake along the New Madrid Fault, right down the center of our country. And most people don't realize some of the biggest earthquakes in all of U.S. history happened along the New Madrid Fault in the early 1800s. There's a deep scar under the earth there, under the ground there, because of the shifting of the continents and how that happened back in ancient times. But there's a massive scar underneath the New Madrid Fault area, and a giant earthquake there would do damage. It would be the worst natural disaster we've ever seen in all of U.S. history. But men and women of God have been shown this, Tony, that when we divide the land of Israel, our land of Israel will be divided along the New Madrid Fault. So the big New Madrid earthquake comes after the dividing of the land of Israel. Something else that comes after the dividing of the land of Israel is the giant East Coast tsunami. So until the land of Israel is divided, we're not going to see the giant New Madrid earthquake, and we're not going to see the tsunami that comes where a meteor, or some people have seen that breaks up into three pieces, comes and slams into the Atlantic Ocean, causing a giant tsunami hundreds of feet tall, slamming into the East Coast of the United States. You've had some people on your show talk about, some of your guests have talked about this, Tony, so I know you know about it, where it just sweeps miles and miles inland, killing, an incredible amount of people, wiping out entire towns, entire communities, entire cities. It would be unlike anything the tsunami we saw in Japan back in 2011 would be child's play compared to that's what's coming. But that has to wait until we divide the land of Israel. Dividing the land of Israel comes first. Then there is a giant war in the Middle East, and where Israel, with the Palestinians and the other Arab nations surrounding Israel, attack and invade and try to destroy Israel. And it's going to be the biggest war we've ever seen in the Middle East. Horrible, bloody. That's the bad news. The good news is that Israel is going to ultimately win and get back much more of her land. But the bad news is it's going to be a horrible war. But that comes after the dividing of the land of Israel. And so essentially what I'm telling your audience is the most important prophetic marker that we're watching for beyond anything else is the dividing of the land of Israel. After that happens, we're going to see the perfect storm that John Paul Jackson and others warned about. We're going to see the great New Madrid earthquake. We're going to see the East Coast tsunami. We're going to see economic collapse. We're going to see war in the Middle East and eventually World War III, because after the war in the Middle East, eventually comes the attack by Russia, the United States in a military conflict with Russia and China, which we lose. All that comes beyond this. The gateway, the opening, the opening shot, the thing that unleashes basically hell on earth is the dividing of the land of Israel. So that's why I'm so freaked out about this. That's why I'm watching for this, because this is the number one prophetic marker people should be watching for, Tony. But the church is asleep. Christians are asleep. Nobody seems to understand. Nobody, even though we've been warned about this for decades, everyone thinks everything's going to be great if Donald Trump gets into office. But I'm telling you, that's why I've described this period of time as the danger zone, because between right now and January 20th, we could see Barack Obama go in and with the rest of the UN Security Council divide the land of Israel. If that happens, it's not going to matter if Donald Trump's in the White House. Judgment is coming. It will be here. And everything's going to go to chaos. And we're going to see all these judgments that people are warning about for so long. But if we can get to January 20th and Barack Obama's not done something very foolish at the UN and the land of Israel is not divided and the government's peacefully handed over to Donald Trump, maybe we have a little bit more time. But that's why I'm so concerned about this, Tony.
Yeah, that Joel chapter 3, verse 2, it says, I will gather all nations and bring them down. That sounds like the United Nations, the all nations. The other thing that concerns me a little bit is I think New Zealand still has a seat on that Security Council at the moment until 2017. So I hope it isn't done during our watch because maybe New Zealand will suffer the judgment as well.
Yeah. And I think specifically the United States will be, hit really hard. But after this happens, judgment's coming to the whole world because, the earthquakes that are coming, the tsunamis that are coming there, yeah, they'll affect the United States, but it'll be the whole world as well. And when the U.S. economy collapses, the whole world suffers like we saw in 2008. So ultimately, the whole world's going to suffer. And that will open the door to a time when we will see judgment on the United States. The United States will suffer unlike it's ever suffered before. And the whole world will suffer, but it will lead up to ultimately the fall of the United States, the rise of the one world government, which leads to the rise of the Antichrist, the Book of Revelation, all the things leading up to the return of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. But the thing that we're watching for, which is going to kind of unleash everything, is the dividing of the land of Israel. So that's why this is so critically important that we watch for this. That's why I've been writing about it over and over and over again in recent weeks, because ultimately, the way this goes, it's more important than whether Trump or Hillary Clinton won the election. This decision is far more important. So let us pray that Barack Obama makes the right decision.
Yes, even if Barack Obama doesn't, and you've mentioned earlier that Donald Trump has also said some worrying things, and so it could get pushed back into his time as president and still be done.
Yeah, there's always a possibility, and of course, Donald Trump, will he keep his word on different things? There are real questions about that because, Tony, just because we elected him doesn't mean he's going to be a righteous president. For example, he just won the election. He goes on 60 Minutes kind of for his first major interview, and they Leslie Stahl asked him. She said, hey, a lot of gay and lesbian people, they're really concerned about, this whole gay marriage thing. Are you going to try to, appoint judges that will overturn gay marriage, the gay marriage decision? And Donald Trump said, no. Hey, that's already been through the courts. That's already been decided. That's already settled. And I'm fine with that. Donald Trump said he is fine with that. So unlike abortion, where he's still promising that he's going to try to appoint justices to overturn Roe versus Wade, Donald Trump has absolutely no intention of appointing Supreme Court justices that intend to overturn the gay marriage decision. In fact, Donald Trump seems quite satisfied with gay marriage being the law of the land. Well, Donald Trump couldn't have gotten elected without Bible-believing Christians casting votes for him in tremendous numbers, and then he turns right around and stabs them in the back. Or this thing with Israel we mentioned earlier, where, right after the election, he comes out and says, I'd really like to do a deal with Israel and the Palestinians and divide up the land and bring peace there. That is essentially stabbing Christians in the back because mess with Israel.
He also supposedly stood as anti-globalist, and yet one of the first people he had a meeting with was Henry Kissinger, who is Mr. Globalist, Mr. New World Order himself, and Trump's praised Henry Kissinger. It's like, how anti-globalist can you be if you're praising the guy that's been saying for years we need a New World Order? Anyway, that's my rant
you're right.
on it.
And he's still considering Mitt Romney for Secretary of State, who's a card-carrying member of the New World Order. So a lot of the people he's bringing into his administration, it's troubling. So he's already started to go back on many of his promises. And so, you know, we'll see. Is Donald Trump going to be a righteous president or not? So far, I think there's a lot of red flags out there. I'm very concerned about people he's bringing into his administration, decisions he's already making, you know, how he's backing down already on a lot of his promises. He already, you know, and when, during the campaign, he was saying, oh, we need to lock Hillary Clinton up. Now he's saying he doesn't plan to prosecute her. In fact, he told one interviewer that, oh, the Clintons are good people.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's like, and people just don't they want to bury their head in their sand and not look at that. The fact is, he said on that one debate, if he was president, you'd be in jail. And now he's come out since and said what great people the Clintons are. And all these people that have prophesied that Donald Trump is going to, you know, be King Cyrus and America's going to be so great under Donald Trump, I don't think they want to see these things. They've got their blinders on.
Yeah, and you know what? You know, most of the people who are, you know, who are saying these things about Trump, they're kind of basing their things off of one positive Trump prophecy. But the truth is, the weight of the prophetic word is actually, you know, there are a lot of people that prophesied Trump would win, but they're also prophesying judgment is coming. For example, Dr. Patricia Green, who correctly prophesied that Barack Obama would become president, correctly prophesied that Donald Trump would win the election. She's prophesied all these judgments are coming anyway.
And so did our own Joni Starr. You know, Minute to Midnight's Joni Starr. She said almost a year ago now that Donald Trump would be president, the next president, and she's stuck with that. But she's also been, you know, prophesying judgments coming.
Yeah, I was just about to mention her. Or you look at like Brother Sadhu from India, prophesied Donald Trump would win, but also prophesying these judgments are coming. In fact, he's one of them that prophesied that the land of Israel, and that we will see the New Madrid earthquake when the land of Israel is divided. So, you know, a lot of people who did prophesy correctly that Donald Trump would win, they are also prophesying that judgment is coming. And you know what, Tony? My wife and I, we've been studying these things for many, many years. In fact, my wife has collected hundreds and hundreds of prophecies about what's coming to America on whygodreallyexists.com, if people want to go check some of them out. And so my wife and I are constantly into this. And, you know, when after Donald Trump won the election, we sat down and we're like, okay, you know, what about these prophecies? Well, the only prophecy that does not appear likely to be fulfilled under Trump is the division of the land of Israel. Every other prophecy that we know of could be fulfilled while Donald Trump is president. In fact, a lot of them become a lot more likely because civil unrest is prophesied in cities like Chicago, Baltimore, Washington, D.C., Los Angeles, and other major cities around the United States. Well, all those are areas that supported Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. So why would they be rioting and going crazy if a Democrat was in the White House? It makes so much more sense if Trump is in the White House, why there would be civil unrest. Or we've got prophecy about how that there's going to be internal revolution started by the communists, the radical left, the far left. Why would they start a revolution against Obama or against Hillary Clinton? But if there's Trump is in the White House, it makes sense why they would start a violent revolution. And we've already seen them, the protests that have erupted in various cities around the country. But every prophecy that we know of could be fulfilled under Donald Trump. The only one that doesn't seem likely is the division of the land of Israel. That's why we're watching this period of time leading up to January 20th. And then beyond that, as we've already said, Donald Trump could always go back on his word, could always decide that he wants to divide the land of Israel. So we don't know what he's going to do. But personally, I'm very concerned about what Barack Obama might do up until the point of January 20th.
Can you give our listeners your websites? You've got three of them, I believe, plus Miranda's one.
Yeah, let me give the address once again for Miranda's website where she collects these prophetic words. It's whygodreallyexists.com. And then you can find my work on theeconomiccollapseblog.com, or if you just go to Google and you type in The Economic Collapse, it's the first result that comes up. I also have themostimportantnews.com, or if you just go to Google and type in the most important news, it's the first result that comes up, where you'll find all my articles gathered in one place, but also guest articles, the other most important news from all around the internet, all around the world, gathered in a single place, kind of like a news hub, kind of like the Drudge Report. And then my latest book, all about the end times, and I talk some about the judgment coming on America, some of the things we touched on today. My latest book is entitled The Rapture Verdict. You can find it on Amazon.com, or if you just go to any of our websites, click on the banner, and it'll take you right to where you can get it. It's available in Kindle and in paperback version.
Awesome. I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. We've covered a lot of different topics, and I've learned a lot. And I think the whole distinction about the UN Assembly versus Security Council, I hope people pick that up. That's a really important distinction. And yeah, I've thoroughly enjoyed it. So thank you for being on the A Minute to Midnight show again today, Michael.
Oh, thank you, Tony. It's a pleasure to be on, and you have your listeners are great, and the guests you bring on are top notch. So it's a real honor to be on the show,
and it's an honor to have you. Thank you.
Thank you.
At the AMinuteToMidnight.com website, we post all of our shows and regularly new articles on there as well. We have a donation button on the website. We really appreciate the people that help us. We keep this show running and the website and the articles running on donations. So thank you to the people that do help us out that way. I write, record, and play all the music for our shows. So you can find my music, royalty-free production music, and sound effects at rockshoresounds.com, and there's a link to that on the A Minute to Midnight website. And we have a Facebook group, A Minute to Midnight Facebook group, which you're welcome to join as well. Well, that's about it for today's show. Catch you in the next episode. Hope you enjoyed today's one as much as I did.